What a privilege it is to be here. And after a lunch like that, I'm starting to wonder if I'm at the right church. Maybe I should be coming here more often. It is an absolute privilege to be able to come and just share some of the things that we saw and how God has been working in our lives from this missions trip. I am not a public speaker, and I'm not somebody who has been on a ton of missions trips either. So I hope I can just share the things that we have seen and experienced with you, and that although I don't have tons of experience, that God uses that in your lives at some point. Anybody here been on a missions trip before? Nice, a lot. Anybody been on a missions trip to the continent of Africa? All right. Did you? Where did you live?
Nigeria.
Nice. I've gone back to school part-time, and there's actually a ton of young people from Nigeria who are in my program, so it's been really neat to talk to them and get to know them.
Yeah, Pam's coming in a minute now. She's a missionary with Wycliffe in Burkina Faso.
Ooh, okay. All right. So you guys,
That's her right now.
There she is. So,
just asked if there's any other people missionaries in Africa.
Very, very cool. So anybody been on a missions trip to Kenya? I'm sure Kenya, there's a lot of similarities to some of the other countries in Africa. I haven't been to any of them, so I'd be interested in afterwards hearing of any similarities there might be. So I have two amazing teen girls. I've got one that will be 18, so not a teen, but an adult in only a couple of months, and then I've got a 15-year-old. And so I was on a missions trip when I was in grade 10, so Fiona's age, and it really was impactful on my life, and I saw things there that I've never seen since then, and I really wanted my girls at a time in their lives that they are very impressionable to be able to experience something like that. And so about a year and a half ago, I reached out to a missionary family in Kenya and said, I am considering bringing my girls on a missions trip. Would you pray with me for the next 6 months? And let's see if this would be a great fit. And so after 6 months of some prayer around that on both sides, we decided that we're going to go ahead and give this a shot. And so we started raising some funds, and before you know it, time was here to jump on the plane and head over. Now, one thing that I did not know going into this, which any of you who have been on a missions trip before would have also experienced and kind of worked your way through, is that I did not realize that once I came home, I was going to start to process in a different way a lot of the things that we saw and experienced. So when we were there, my brain was very, very busy processing the how. How can this possibly be happening? How come they're not doing this and they're not doing that like we do back home? And then I got home, and I would say I was probably good for about 4 or 5 days. Got over jet lag, and I just became a mess. And every single time I thought of the who's, I would start to cry. And actually, it was interesting because I had sent out a few letters while I was over there, and or emails, and Peter Bolton had, after my last one, had sent me a message back saying, so like, how are you going to debrief all this stuff that you just talked to us about in this letter once you get home? And I kind of thought, like, I don't really even know what he's talking about. And man, he was bang on. So I am excited to say that I am finally past the stage of crying about this. So hopefully I'll be pretty good. But there are some things that are absolutely life-changing and will always have a very special place in my heart. So when we went over there, what we did is we actually worked with children in many different areas, in many different roles. So right now in Kenya, they are about to step into a massive epidemic there. So Kenya has stopped allowing international adoption. You can foster, but you cannot adopt anymore. And I think over 95% of their children that have been abandoned were adopted by international families. And the reason that Kenya has done this is because it is their way of saying we are trying to protect these children from entering into sex slavery. Now, is there a percentage of those children who that was happening to? From my understanding, there is. However, that percentage was very, very small. That is not how typically children from that country end up in those scenarios. So with no longer having families being able to adopt internationally, they are having more and more children who have been abandoned being given to baby rescue centers and orphanages. And what you're seeing now is, because it's not typically the Kenyan family who would adopt, these children are starting to age out, whereas in the past it didn't typically have that problem. So then it becomes, where do these children go? How are they going to continue to be taken care of? Now, what the what the Kenyan government has announced is that I think it's as of 2026, they would like all orphanages and rescue centers to be closed. So the government is of the mindset that if you do not have a place for your child to go, you will no longer abandon your child. You will no longer give your child up. And the government is not providing any supports to change that. So obviously the people who are working within this field are saying, this is a massive problem, and we have been barely meeting these needs. Now these changes are being made, and these changes are going to continue to be made, and we don't know how we are going to handle what is about to come down the tubes. So while we were there, we got to learn a little bit more about that, and we got the opportunity to go and have some one-on-ones with a lot of these children and different organizations. So I'm going to kind of like walk you through the different places we went and what we got to do and what we got to learn. And let's just have like a total interactive experience here. And if you guys have questions, like, you just shout them out, and it would be my privilege to answer them or to give clarification. So the first place that we went was actually a baby rescue center. And so what was really incredible about that for us is we really got to interact with a lot of the workers there. And we got to hear their stories. We got to hear about their families. We got to learn kind of really a lot of the details of the culture there. And so one thing that I guess it sounds kind of crazy, but I really, really enjoyed is a couple of days while we were there, my girls and I, all we did all day long was wash nappies, so reusable diapers, hang them up, take them down, put them back where they need to be used again, and the cycle continues. So there's two women at that organization, 12 hours a day, they wash diapers, hang them up to dry, and they've got line after line after line, and as soon as all those lines are full, you go back to the first line, and those nappies are now dry, and you take them down. So per nappy, there are two material inserts, and you are washing thousands of nappies a day. And it was a really beautiful experience just to be beside them and talk to them and like build what you would almost feel like is a friendship, right? The other thing that was really neat there that we had the opportunity to do is this organization, once a year gets a visit from a organization or a company or a church or something in Florida. So what this organization does is they spend an entire year collecting things for a few different ministries, and then those things get shipped over, they meet the shipment there, and then they disperse them to the different ministries in Kenya. And this ministry just so happened, or like the baby orphanage, or sorry, baby rescue center, just so happened to be one of the organizations that they support. So they brought in buckets and buckets and buckets full of clothes. So my daughters and I for 3 days sat there and started filtering through these clothes. So there's brand new all the way down to very heavily used. So very, very heavily used was separated, and then those were donated to the slums. And then anything that was medium used to brand new was then sorted by gender and then by age. Okay, so we first get there and they say, here is the room, floor to ceiling of buckets of things that need to be separated. And here is a corner in the hallway that is all tile where you can put your piles and start to separate. And I'm getting old. And about 20 minutes later, my knees were killing me. And you've got all kinds of piles, right? You've got preemie all the way to size 5 boys. And then you've got preemie all the way to size 5 girls. And then, you know, you've got a 12 to 18 month girls. And you're like, wait, which pile was that again? And then a staff member walked by and opened the door. And inside, I saw this massive table, which would probably be about 4 of these tables put together. And I was just sitting there empty. And I said, hey, like, could we use that table? And she was like, oh, yeah, of course. And I thought, okay, this is great. Save my knees and my back. And then I said to her, hey, do you think that you could grab me, okay, get this, you guys, some tape, a marker, and a piece of paper? Because what I would like to do is create labels for each pile, so I know where we're going with each piece of clothing. And she was like, oh my goodness, that's brilliant. Yes. And disappeared and comes back with all of these labels. And she decides she's going to jump in and help out. And so she goes, boy, age 4, girl, 3 months, girl, 0 months, boy, I don't know, 6 to 12 months. And without being too rude, I said, hey, do you mind if I kind of help out here? I think if we did preemie all the way to boys on this side of the table in a row, and then preemie all the way to girls size 5 on this side, it might just go a little bit faster. And she was like, oh my goodness, I love that, yes. And so we did that, and we kept going bucket after bucket. And within a couple of hours, I think every single employee that was working there came up to see what we were doing. And like, I walked away feeling like a celebrity. Like, they could not believe that we had thought to do that. We got done in 3 years. I mean, sorry. We got done in 3 days what typically takes them an entire year to do. Now, we were working on it like beginning of the day to end of day, and they would have to have, you know, one employee for a couple of hours here and one for there. But I learned there that critical thinking is not taught around the world like we have here. And I couldn't, like, that concept, it actually took me a couple of days to wrap my mind around. I didn't even realize that we are taught critical thinking here. I thought that's just how God has designed our brains to be, and that comes naturally. And then as our trip went on, I saw many other scenarios where the critical thinking piece was not taught. And so very taken back by that, but then also so incredibly thankful for things you never think about back home, right? So after there, we went on to another Christian mission agency, and they did physiotherapy on children. So it was really, really neat and eye-opening and like heart-changing to go to this next place. We learned very different things. And the people who were running that, those missionaries, I tell you, like they had thought this through. They were so smart. But so very first thing they did is they explained to you what it is that they did. So what they do is they find sort of the children with the most severe disabilities within the slums. So the kids who have the worst and are living in the worst life conditions and don't have the ability to receive typically the help that they need. So we came in, and the first thing they start doing is saying, okay, like this little guy right here, we need you to start massaging his legs for us. And then this little one over here, we need you to start moving her arm in this direction. And this little guy here, this and this. And so we're hands-on helping these kids. And then they're telling you the stories of these kids. So this little guy here, how old do you think he is? 3, 4? No, he's actually 8 years old. And the reason that he looks like he is 3 to 4 years old, and the reason that he doesn't have teeth, and the reason that his body is permanently in like a fetal position is because mom had the choice to not go out and stay with him and not make money, or mom had the choice to leave him in what is 4 tin walls, go out to the dump in hope to find something, in hope to turn around and be able to sell that, to be able to put food in his belly. And so this little guy, Francis was his name in particular, he, ever since being just a little tiny thing, was left for 12 hours at a time inside. And what was happening is he was just sitting in that fetal position and, grinding his teeth. And that's why he didn't have any teeth left. You know, there was another little one and their hand was always like this. And so, you know, like, why is her hand always like that? Well, because in the shanty or the slum that she was in, there was a pinhole in the tin wall and or tin sheet, right, that was used as a wall, and that's where the light came in every day. And she wasn't of the age where she could move, and so her hand was always up like that, blocking that light, and now permanently it was like that. And so you're sitting there and you're like, oh my goodness, what kind of mom is like that? And I'm so mad and so angry, and you know, like, I know what it's like to have to do your absolute best to be able to provide for your child as a single parent. And so I'm like, what is happening? Like, why has mom done this? Why isn't grandparents surrounding mom and helping? And where are the friends? I know, as a single parent for many years, my friends ended up becoming my community. And when this friend had to go out and work, like, you don't even say, no, I'm too busy. You take their kid, and they did the same thing for you. And like, so where is the community in here? And that's just not how the government has created, such of them. Like, they haven't created an environment like that over there. And the best way for me to describe that is, if you were in a back alleyway and there was a hurt cat and you were like, you know what, I'm going to help this cat. And you walk up to that cat, what is that cat going to do? They're probably going to fight you, right? Yeah. And freak out. And that is the environment that has been created over there, right? Mom was having babies at 14, and mom's still having her own babies, and mom still has to support her own kids. And, you know, people are ashamed that they have to hide their children away. And so don't want people to know that. And friends aren't helping because they're just trying to feed themselves. They're just trying to take care of themselves. And of course, no government supports. And so, you know, you're helping these kids and you're just so heartbroken by it. And the anger is growing in you. Like, how can mom ever let this happen? Because you don't understand these other concepts yet. And then what they did is they fed us lunch, and then the other half of the day we had to sit there and listen to mom after mom after mom share her testimony. So the way that this organization works is absolutely brilliant. So what they do is they say to mom, you might be able to make a dollar today, so we are going to pay your transportation to get you and your kid here, we are going to feed you lunch, we are going to give you your dollar, and while your child is receiving care, you're going to walk through, and it's about 4 hours of a Bible study every single time with the other women. And so we had the privilege of sitting there and hearing the stories of these moms. One in particular, she had had another child and was in the same position, and she had lost her child to malnutrition. And now she was in the same position again and did not have the supports and the ability to create a different path. And I cannot imagine having to make those kind of choices, right? And so it really opened my eyes to the supports that we have here and the culture that we have here. You know, although we definitely, at least I do, complain about the government a lot, some of the things that they don't have over there that was just so eye-opening to me about how blessed we are to have some of the government pieces in place that we do. And so that was pretty incredible. Then we decide, let's just take a bit of an emotional break. And we, the church that these missionaries were connected to, we decided that we were going to do some landscaping and just try and make their church look a little bit more beautiful. So over there, everything that would be middle class and up is in a compound. And before I went there, a compound to me sounded like a very negative word, but it's not. It's a neutral word. It's very common over there. Everybody's got walls up around their place and they have a gate, and either you've got, depending on how much money you have, you either have somebody at the end of the gate 24/7 or maybe at the end of the road so people can't get down the road to get to your gate. And so this church was in a compound and they had somebody at the gate at all times. And her name was Lily. And I'm actually going to ask each and every one of you as you go about your week and perhaps your month just to be thinking and praying about Lily. So the reason we decided to do some landscaping is my girls, that's what their job has been over the last few years, is their summer job has been doing landscaping. Whoever thought that God would use landscaping, right? So we got over there. We were blessed enough to be able to raise a little bit more money than what we actually needed. And so we were able to go and purchase some plants and some planters. And we were able to just add a little bit of color and life to the outside of the church building. Well, it took us, I think, about 2.5 days to do this. And this whole time, the guard who is at the gate is kind of watching and kind of interested in what's going on here. And by midday on day two, she's right in there and, you know, okay, guys, this flower's got to go here. And so you dig the hole and you put the flower in, and she's right in there on top of your hands, smushing the dirt around. And so we had an opportunity to get to know Lily a little bit. And then I found out once I came back that Lily, after we had done that, went to the pastor of the church and said, hey, like, do you think that it could be my responsibility to be able to water these flowers and to be able to pull the weeds out of the garden? And so the pastor was like, yeah, of course, absolutely. And her response was, I now have a purpose. I can't believe that that is what she feels like her purpose is. How heartbreaking, right? Here's a really, really cool piece, is that Lily, to get the water, has to go to the kitchen, which is at the back of the church. And every day, Lily is walking through the church to get to the water. Every day, Lily is having conversations with church staff members that she wasn't having before. Lily, and I specifically ask this, is not a Christian. And the church is excited around the fact that Lily will be able to hear more about God and will be able to build relationships and friendships. And so if you guys can keep praying for Lily alongside of me, I think that would be a really cool thing. And so we kind of wrapped that job up. That was a pretty neat thing, just to be able to sit back and say, here's this skill set that my girls have been doing. Whoever thought that they would be the ones that had the knowledge to be able to kind of lead that project over there, right? They're the ones that were able to say, this plant would do well over here and this plant would do well over there. So you never ever know how God is going to use the things that you maybe take for granted back home, right? So I felt like I was doing so good, you know. We were there for just under 3 weeks. We had been to, three different project places, and I'd gotten through it all without crying, and so I was feeling like I was pretty impressed with myself. The very last big thing that we did before we left is we decided that we would go to a hospital that's located just outside of the slums, and we would see if there were any women who were about to go into labor that we could pray with. So I'm thinking, one, hospitals like we see here, that sure ain't the case. And two, I'm thinking the response that we are going to get there is what I would suspect that this response here would be, which is, no, I'm good, thanks anyways. Or it would be something along the lines of like, well, yeah, okay, I guess that would be okay, but probably saying that because they didn't feel comfortable and didn't know how else to answer that question. So, you know, I wasn't really sure what I was about to get myself into. Now, we have at this point spent over 2 weeks there, and a few different times have been at the edges of some slums, and you know, we've got to meet the people and to process a lot of the stories. And so we are driving a tuk-tuk to the hospital, and that's like this little tiny like vehicle almost. It's almost like it's a three-wheeled, let's say, like almost like a motorcycle with a thing that has some seats on it on the back of it. But anyways, so it's tight, and it is hot, and the windows are down, and we are driving by the slums, and you know, all of your senses are engaged, right? You're hot and you're sweaty and you're uncomfortable. You smell the urine. You hear the babies crying, and you hear like the banging of the metal and the sharpening of the metal, and you are seeing the sights. And you know, on the way, it was shared with us by the missionary that just a couple weeks before that, there was a mother who actually chose to give birth on the front lawn of this hospital. She did that because she didn't have the money to give birth inside, and hoped that if there were problems, that somebody would have a heart and stop and help her. I can't imagine being in that kind of a predicament. And one thing that I learned over there is when moms talk with moms, the first question is, did your baby cry? Over there, obviously they don't have the same health care as we do. And if your baby is born and your baby cries right away, you know you've got yourself a healthy baby. Now, I didn't realize this, but cerebral palsy is actually the result of trauma during labor. And so that, because they don't have the health care that we have over there, there are very, very high rates of cerebral palsy over there, and many other health concerns as well. And so often you will hear a mother say, my baby didn't cry. And so you know, that child most likely would have some sort of disabilities throughout their life. And so so we're driving to the hospital. We are going by the slums. Again, all of your senses are engaged. And we get there and we walk into the delivery room. And so I'm kind of expecting maybe one or two beds in each room. Well, guess what? There's only one room. And in that room was 11 beds. And that is where the women gave birth. And that is where they stayed until they left a day or so afterwards. Now, I was blown away when I walked through that room. And I'm sure you have all seen a wartime movie where, you know, you had like those metal beds lined up, and they sure didn't look very comfortable, and you're way too close to the person beside you. And that is exactly what that room looked like. So I was kind of taken back by that. And there was one lady, and she was sort of like pacing the floor, and you knew that like, okay, labor's right around the corner. And so we walked up to her and we just said, like, can we pray for you? And she was so excited for us to pray for her. And it was neat for me as a mom, because I've been trying to transition my girls over the last year or so into deeper, more meaningful prayer with God. You know, like one of the things that we have fallen into a routine as a family is we get in the car and the first thing we do is we start praying. And so, you know, like, you know, on the way to school, let's say, you know, you're praying, and, you know, the person who typically sits in this seat jumps in first, and then this person, and then this person, and, you know, or we're going to the grocery store, and we just fall into prayer. And it's been beautiful to watch that grow in my girls, but it was still a lot of, like, and I pray for this, and I pray for that, and I pray for this person, and I pray for that person. But what I really wanted to see growth in is the ability to be able to pick one thing and go down in depth in how you pray for that one thing or that one person. So it was really neat as a mom to watch as my children put their hands on this woman that we didn't know and just spend the time thinking through what are all the different ways that we can pray for her. And then the most incredible thing happened. So we open our eyes and we turn around and the room filled with people. And as we were praying, we didn't hear them coming in. And you've got, you know, you've got your women that were already in there. You had probably 20 to 30 more women who were either about to give birth within the next month or who had just given birth that were in there. And then there was probably about 25 staff members, including doctors and nurses. And I was so shocked when I turned around, like, where did this come from? Again, thinking that no one's going to want prayer. And if they say yes, it's probably because they don't feel comfortable. And these people all wanted prayer. And they waited so that one after another, we could pray for them. And what was incredible about that is you could watch these moms like memorizing the words that you are saying. They don't have anything over there, and so they were grasping onto the words that we were saying, and that was their hope. And over here, sometimes I think we don't have the need for hope. We have so many distractions. There's so many things here that we, so many of our needs are met that we don't even stop and think about. And so we're praying for these women, and you can just sense and you can feel and you can hear them just repeating the words and memorizing them. And you know that these words are going to be carried throughout the lives of these children. And you sit there and you think, like, who am I to have this intercepted prayer? I'm nobody. And to the point where I'm not even from here. I'm not even living through the difficulties that you are. So who am I? And it was just so incredible because you know that they walked out of there and they were just grasping on to every single word. And so we get through praying for all of these women and we start just kind of talking to them individually, and a staff member pipes up and introduced herself as like the administrative lead of the hospital. And she was like, well, like, the staff are here because they want prayer too. And again, like, who am I to be praying for this doctor and that doctor and this nurse? And so I had the privilege of praying for all of them together. And, you know, at first you're trying to kind of keep the tears back, right? And then I thought, no, like, it's okay. It's okay for them to see how impactful and beautiful this moment is. And how in so many ways they have changed mine and my daughter's lives. And it's not just about us coming and helping them. They have greatly helped us. And just to be able to have the opportunity to go before the Lord and lay these concerns at his feet and to know that he hears those. And he gathers those and he holds on to those. And there's just something about prayer over there that is very different than prayer over here. And I think, you know, like, I could sit here and I could have prayer with each of you and it could be beautiful and it could be wonderful. And we would say thank you for that. And we would walk away from that. And we would say, what an incredible opportunity to spend time together in prayer. But I can almost guarantee you a year down the road, you're not going to remember what was said. And I can almost guarantee you that these are the words that will be repeated to these children over and over. Now, on the wall of this room was this great big poster, and it had things like how many C-sections have happened, how many vag birth has happened, how many this has happened, how many that has happened. You know what they didn't have on there? They had everything on there. They did not have how many deaths. And I think that's probably because there's way too many, right? And I sat there, and these babies that we were praying over, some of them will be born not healthy enough and will never leave that hospital. Some of these children will be born and they won't cry, and mom will wrap them tight and she will leave them somewhere for somebody else to find and for them to go into a baby rescue center. The babies that make it home, they're going to be those babies that I had just driven by and watched running naked down the path in a slum, should be at school, deserve to be at school, deserve to be at school just as much as my kids and the next kids and the next kids here, but never will have the opportunity to be educated and will have empty bellies. And, you know, we just sat there and all of that was just kind of hitting me, the beautifulness of the faith that these people have and the opportunity that we had to experience prayer like that, and the reminder of how incredible it is to be able to lay your cares at the feet of your Maker, and He greatly cares, it doesn't matter what it is. And so I think for me, that will be a memory that at least I hope I will carry with me for the rest of my life and will always greatly impact me to the point of tears, hopefully even, right? And so it was just so neat just to be able to touch the lives of these women. You know, there was one lady there and her little one, you would think was maybe about 6 months old, and he was actually a year and a half. And just completely, because of disabilities through labor, completely unable to ever be able to crawl or to talk or to anything. And so many of these families in Kenya are single moms. And so here is a single mom who has no support systems. And let's go back to that analogy of the cat down the alleyway, right? Nobody is assisting mom, and mom is so tired and she was just crying. And they were speaking Swahili there. And so we had a translator, and the translator, you know, is telling us just how badly mom just wants prayer because she can't keep going, and she is going to find that strength in those prayers. And again, how often do we sit here and find ongoing strength in our prayers? So it was just really an incredible opportunity all around to be able to go to Kenya and be able to experience this, to be able to share this with my girls, to be able to talk through the things that we saw. And, you know, it's kind of neat because you know, one of my daughters is almost an adult and the other one is right in the thick of it as being a teenager. And so to watch them process and what each of them took from our experience was different. And to be able to have a relationship with those missionaries, and, you know, like we were talking to them and they never eat meat the last week of the month. And the reason is because, like, they can't afford it. And everywhere we went, they always brought with them a container of oil. And that's kind of like a staple over there, you know, kind of like our staple might be eggs. Theirs is a container of oil. They often make things that would be comparable to a pita, right? And that is one of the staples over there, something like that, in beans. So to have oil was always a staple, a basic. And You know, I came home and my parents were asking us about the trip. And I said, you know, I think I can answer one of the very first questions that's going to come out of your mouth. Do you think you're going to go back permanently? I mean, what grandparent doesn't have maybe a little bit of a fear that their grandchildren and their daughter might be totally moved and be taken away? And, you know, I said to them, I said, I cannot speak enough of the people who are missionaries over there. They are dealing with trauma, not every day, but multiple times a day. And they stick it out in the trenches. And I'm not strong enough to do that. I was quite happy to come back and say, now I work in ministry, to say, you know, I'm quite happy to come back to my little corner office and be just serving God in the way that I serve God. And that's great and all, because it's evident that that's where God has wanted me. But what these missionaries are doing is mind blowing. And this missionary family that we were with were 18 years in. When we were at one of the mission agencies, the one where it was giving physiotherapy to the kids, one of the stories that the missionaries there shared with us was just a couple of weeks before we came, they got a phone call in the middle of the night from the police, and we have come across this baby, and you need to come and get this baby right now, or this baby's not going to make it. Now, first of all, here, that's not going to happen. That's not the norm here. And if it is, that baby would go to the hospital right away and the right supports are in place to have everything taken care of. However, over there, the police didn't want to take the baby to the hospital. They're going to be stuck with those medical bills, right? So this is what it looked like for those missionaries in that moment. It's the middle of the night. The police there are corrupt. Are they doing this because they want to rob us? You know, they've asked to meet us on the side of a road in the middle of nowhere. What do we do? Okay, well, you know, can you hang on to the baby till morning? No, we can't hang on to the baby till morning. You've got to come now. And so so they decide, okay, then we're going to do this. So they have to find security to watch their compound, because now they know that the police know that they've left and their compound is now unprotected. Then they have to find security with guns to come with them in case this really is just about the police wanting to rob them. They get there, and sure enough, there was a baby, and the baby was in such poor conditions that if that baby had not been taken that night, that baby would not have made it to the morning. And I don't know if Peter said anything to you guys, but I was telling them some stories, and I was like, I don't know exactly what to say and what isn't okay to say, and to spare you some thoughts that aren't the nicest, like, this baby just was not okay. This baby had been abandoned, and just the elements of life that come with that applied in this situation. And so they get that baby to the hospital, and the baby ends up making it. But, like, let's just stop. Like, that in itself does not happen here. Let's look at the traumas. You're woken up in the middle of the night and scared. You don't know if you can trust the police. You have to find security to protect your compound. You have to find security to come with you. In the middle of the night, you're going out into the absolute, you know, like, darkest of the streets to get this baby. This baby is not okay. You have to take this baby to the hospital. You are praying for the safety and the health of this baby. You are paying for those medical bills. And then you have to find where this baby is going to go and be taken care of afterwards. That is one thing. One thing. That is a normal thing over there. And so, I was just blown away by the dedication that these missionaries have, the strength that they find in the Lord that I think sometimes I forget to. And it was just incredible to watch how every single day they're coming before God again, saying, use me. I feel like I'd be too scared after some of the things I saw to truthfully be able to offer that up to God. And so many beautiful things were taught there. So, you know, we come home and we get a lot of, how was your trip? And I guess you would be able to answer this and understand, and perhaps you would be able to, and you, sir, I didn't even know how to answer that question. Like, how do you answer that question without having an hour of somebody's time? You know, it's like, well, it was heartbreaking. It was heartwarming. It was eye-opening. It was life-changing. It was relationship-changing between my daughters and I. It was relationship-changing between God and I. And it was an opportunity and an experience that we as a family will never, ever forget. And I hope we as a family will never, ever allow those thoughts to stop losing the impact that they had. And what's great is things like this, where I get to talk about it, right? And keep that in the forefront of my mind and my heart. So thank you for the opportunity to be able to do that. And I would love to be able to answer any questions that anyone might have. Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what it's like there, but you know, what I saw outside of, we were quite far from Nairobi. And so, you know, one of the things that we saw is like somebody might have a stand. There were a lot of women who would have a stand where you'd have like your bananas and your avocado and, you know, a couple of this and a couple of, you know, like a pineapple, a little bit of everything. And at first thought, before you get to dive in, like you have, is you think, oh, this is good. Like they're making money. And then you drive around the corner and then the next corner and the next corner and you realize like there's 1,000 of these booths. And you're probably lucky to sell one fruit a day, and you're probably having 3 fruits go bad. And so one of the things that I really appreciated with being able to go and visit the missionaries, and sir, you might be able to confirm this or tell me a bit about your situation, is, you know, it wasn't this, we fly in and, you know, make a big financial contribution, get pictures with people and fly out. You know, we got to learn a lot of the ins and outs of the culture. And just because you have a banana stand does not necessarily mean that you're going to be walking home with money to feed your child at the end of the day, right? Yeah, a couple of things that I did learn. And again, I am not a professional at this, so if this is incorrect, you jump right in and you say so. But one thing that I did see is, so first of all, Kenya in Nairobi has one of the largest slums in the entire world. I think it's the second largest slum. And you have millions of people packed in within a like 10 block radius, let's say. And I can't even begin to process how you would penetrate that many people. I might have a bit of backlash for saying this, but from what I had heard, when missionaries first went over, I think the steps that they took are not the steps that we would take nowadays. I think there was a lot of financial support, which was obviously needed. However, I believe it has created to some degree, and this is not everybody, but in some people, like a sense of entitlement. I don't have anything. And you as a mission organization have given to this person and this person. So if I'm in the same financial place they are worse, then why am I not getting that? And so I think there's a lot of trying to change mindsets, which will take years. And then, of course, you don't have the supports in the government system. And the government, from what I saw, is very specifically creating, I think, the environment that they want, right? Yeah, great question. So if you kind of think of Kenya, and then you've got Nairobi as a capital, we were about 4.5 hours north. So it actually wasn't through a mission. So it was simply this couple had created their own mission agency. Yep. And then we did not have a sending church or a sending mission. We went over on our own. So like the flu kind of went through the house. And so we were actually supposed to go and paint a baby orphanage up another about 4 hours north, where we would have been able to really get involved with that people group. And it was disappointing, but you know, like I also know God protects you, right? And so, yeah, we lost a few days to illness. And so that was the item that had to be removed. Well, and like the driving, I thought within getting the vehicle of 10 minutes, I thought I almost died 20 times. Oh my goodness, I've never seen and experienced that before, right? Like there was like screams coming out of my mouth. Like, it's almost like the concept over there is, if I'm going to break, what's that? Oh my goodness. Yeah. Like if I'm going to break the rules, then I'm going to be the one who has the right of way. And yeah, like there was a lot. Well, the drive should have this will give you just a bit of an insight to the driving over there. The drive should have been 4 hours from Nairobi to where we ended up, which was Katal. And we spent almost 8 hours driving. The reason it took 8 hours is because, are you ready for this? There was an accident the day before. Not even that day. And it had been cleaned up, but the driving is all of a sudden you go from, you know, 2-lane highway to 12 lanes and people are like driving through the fields next to it trying to get back in, and it just causes so much congestion. It was the next day and it still took us that much time. So like there was a train bridge over the road and people were driving on the train bridge, and then it had become congested and nobody could get anywhere, and we're like, the train is gonna come, like you got to get off that bridge. And I guess when it gets bad, that's the norm there, right? So it was pretty wild. Yeah.
And then the road conditions themselves.
Oh yeah.
Roads?
Want to call them that? Well, so these missionaries that we stayed with, they have a vehicle. It's 24 years old. And they said, we know we're getting to the end of the life of the vehicle. And God was so gracious to my girls and I. We knew we had to raise $16,000 to cover the cost of our transportation there, our transportation back, and our costs while we were there. And within 3 months, we had raised over $19,000. God was so good to us. So I was excited that there is a few people who had donated larger sums. And so I went back to them and said, like, we're over. What do you think of, instead of us giving the funding back to you, if we were able to apply that to the different needs? And so they were just so happy that their money would get used appropriately. And so I was so excited because it's like, oh, this is great. You guys can get a new vehicle. Huh. Vehicles are not cheap over there, are they? So you're looking at like easily over 20 grand for a used vehicle because it's got to get shipped in, and the road conditions are so bad. So like a decent vehicle, you know, you want something that can handle that. And yeah, that was a little bit eye opening. So yeah. Yeah.
Is there a lot of concern among the organizations or the missionaries you work with about the trafficking? Is that because it seems like Kenya is worried about trafficking at a governmental level, right?
Yeah.
But do they find that in their work that there is a lot of trafficking that they're trying to stop?
So yes. Yes, you're right. Child trafficking is a huge thing. Are they trying to stop is a totally different conversation. I think, are they trying to stop? Maybe they feel as though they are, but I would say nowhere near to the degree that they could be, or to the degree of what like we would be doing here. However, I will be very clear to say that is not the piece of what we were doing there. We just learned a little bit on the side. However, majority of the children that are being trafficked are the children who are left behind at the hospitals by mom and dad, or just mom typically. And then you also, I believe you're seeing, so what's happening right now is, remember I was saying we were sorting baby clothes from preemie all the way to age five. So it should be preemie all the way to age two. Now they've bumped it to five because they've got no place for those kids to go. Once they hit five, you know, now it's where are they going to head off to? And there are some orphanages that children can go to until they're old enough to care for themselves. A lot of the time, though, those children don't make it to that spot, or they'll go there and they'll get a little bit older and then they're going to say, I'm going to care for myself, and they leave. So within that transition, I think, is also where you're seeing more of like kidnapping and child trafficking, right? Mm-hmm. Good question. Just back to what I was saying originally, it is going to be a really, really big problem over there, because already a massive portion of births are not babies who are wanted and cannot be provided for. And so a lot of babies are abandoned, right? And then if there's no place for those babies to go, the government's like, well, then obviously you're going to have to keep the baby, but they're not offering additional supports. And so they're trying to figure a lot of that out, right? Yeah. From the short amount of time that I was there, I already can see how they need to, as a culture and as a government, need to change the mindset of the people of how incredible of an opportunity it is to be able to adopt, right? Most of the people there, it's just not a part of their culture typically, right? Another thing that I actually heard is, I don't want to say like common, but not unheard of, is if you have somebody who is of middle class or higher and they can't get pregnant, then the wife will leave to visit an old friend or a sister and be gone for a year and come back with a baby. And then we'll say like, this is our baby biologically. And then the baby grows and starts to change in their looks. So first of all, they're going and finding a baby that they actually like, yeah, this baby looks, it's got, you know, my pinky toe or whatever it may be. It's got features that would belong in our family. But then as the child grows and looks different and dad starts to speak up, you do see the teenagers being given up at that point. You know, now they're at the stage of life where they're a little bit more difficult to parent, and dad's saying, it's evident this isn't my baby, or my child, and so I don't want this child in my home anymore. And so now you have teenage children who are just typical teenage children and are being removed from their family because they don't look like them. So I think there needs to be a lot of teaching around the absolute blessing it would be to be able to adopt a baby, right? And so, or a child, whatever. And so I think that, yeah, that mindset needs to get changed for sure. And I can understand for people who like would be adopting Kenyan babies internationally. I can understand there being a real hesitancy not being able to adopt, but only being able to foster, because their fostering laws are different. And like at any point that child could be pulled back, right? Which is why that has been significantly why those connections have been significantly reduced now that they've said that you can't adopt internationally, only foster. So, mm-hmm. These are great questions, though. Yeah.
Were you able to see the national church, go to a local church there? And what was it like? Was that an experience for you?
It was. Now, the missions trip I had been on when I was in grade 10, I had experienced a local church there. And so I kind of knew what I would be seeing and kind of getting into. But it was really neat for my girls to see that, just to be able to like close your eyes and like hear them worship. Sounds very different than it does over here. And there's so much beauty and excitement and joy and life in it. But pretty much what it was a massive cement pad, probably the size of this room and an additional one third onto that. And then it had like tent, sides and top, and everything happened in there and under there. That was their church. That is how they worship. Now they did have a small building beside it. And in it, there was an office for the lead pastor, and then one other room, bathrooms, and then the kitchen. And so, you know what else is really neat? You know, you just get so used to your North American ways. And the way that they do the service over there is they did the worship piece, and then they had somebody talk. This was really neat, actually. They had somebody talk about how the service before had impacted their life. So that was really cool. And then everybody just stopped and just started hanging out and talking. And then out came the coffee and the tea. And they just enjoyed each other's fellowship for a while. And then they went into the service. And so that was really neat, kind of just to see how things were mixed up that way, right? So shaken up, I guess, not mixed up. But yeah. Okay, that looks like it's about it. If you have questions, I'll hang out for a little while. I'd love to swap stories and answer any more questions that might come up. And if you will, please remember Lily in prayer. And the missionary couple that we stayed with, I guess it was actually quite impactful for them to have us come and stay with them. And they have decided that they are actually altering a bit of their mission and what they're going to be doing there after we left. And so they have actually found another home to rent, and it has a little tiny cottage on it, and they want to encourage people to keep coming over, and they want to connect and build stronger relationships with the other mission organizations around and continue to do what they did for us. And what was so great about that is just back to what you were saying earlier, sir, about like how is the next generation going to be able to impact? Well, hopefully people will be coming and staying with them, and they can get them, you know, their sleeves rolled up just like we did and their hands dirty and understanding the culture and the environment and how God is at work over there. And so I think that was a pretty cool thing to be able to sit back and say, hey, like maybe God used us in that way too, right? So their names are Sean and Meredith. They have fostered a little boy who has cerebral palsy from there. They got him. He also was abandoned, and so he was found at 3 days-ish. And so they have, you know, what we would consider adopted, but just fostered him, and he is their son. And so if you want to pray for them, they have a big move coming up. So they're going to be moving into this new place in this coming Saturday. And they are excited to see how God is going to use them in that way moving forward. And if you can just pray for them and all the other missionaries that are out there, sleeves rolled up, in the mess of it every single day, right?